Hello, this is Scott Bakula, and you're listening to Subspace Current Submissions.
Why did you ask me to accompany you, sir?
I needed an engineer.
The ship's full of engineers. Giorgio is an engineer.
An engineer I can trust.
She thinks I'm useless.
She's concerned for Michael and lacks the self-awareness to control her behavior in such an unsettled state. We are introducing ourselves to the future. You, Ensign Tilly, are a wonderful first impression.
Transfer complete.
Welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton, polishing off all that Leland from my shoes.
And we're here this week to talk about the second episode of the third season of Star Trek Discovery, Far From Home.
I suppose so. It's not That Hope Is You Part 2. Go back to our discussion last week to find out why we're so confused. But Cam, Burnham is back, and she has a new hairdo.
That's right. It looks great. I actually think this is a very good haircut for Burnham. I like it.
I think she's had at least four or five distinct dos, especially if you want to include the Vulcan bowl cut that she had in Battle of the Binary Stars flashback. So this is probably my favorite one yet, although I know you're a fan of the Vulcan bowl cut. You still wear this to this day. So,
yeah, I'm rocking one at this very moment.
Yeah. Cam, I like where this episode sets us up for episode 3. I was really going to cringe if we're going to have an entire episode of Burnham pondering about whether or not she's going to be able to find the crew, and then we don't actually see their faces until the very final moments. I'm so glad we got to spend, almost an hour with, Stamets and Saru and Tilly and Jet Reno and all of them. But I have to admit, I get bored out of my mind when I'm watching a hostage situation in an Old West saloon. That did not work for me at all, Cam, and it dragged out way too long.
Yeah, this episode reminded me of the New Eden, the second episode of season 2 Discovery, in that they were both these kind of protracted scenes set in old-timey houses. But I felt like New Eden genuinely had something to say and insight into the character of Pike. Whereas here, it's kind of we're just kind of doing old-timey hostage situation, but with a villain that's not interesting and, a new group of alien characters who I really don't have any real fondness for. And I mean, I did at least cackle, though, when they said they were miners, because I know you love mining colonies and mining on Star Trek.
Cam, why is every single alien we run into a miner in Star Trek? What is Star Trek's obsession with mining?
Well, it's wagon train to the stars, so it's like they want, I guess, Wild West-sounding jobs? Is that it? Is that the real reason? Because this episode is so heavy on, Western tropes. I mean, even the villain had spurs on his boots. You've got the swinging door to the bar and everything, to the tavern. And so was that it? Just mining fits in well with an Old West theme?
I can accept that if the next villain is a railroad baron.
Or the barber surgeon.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you. I sell dry goods. Cam, you said you had no fondness for the new aliens we met. At first, I was wondering, are those supposed to be the long-awaited Rigelians? And then I was like, wait, are they supposed to be changelings? They looked identical to Odo, did they not?
Oh, you know what? They did kind of, or even a little bit like the J.G. Hertzler changeling.
Yeah, Loss. At least Cal did. Cal definitely resembled Odo more than the other ones. I don't know what they're going for. They're not Rigelians, apparently, but...
No, they were Corridans, right?
Something like that. It's just one of the... at a certain point, all these Star Trek alien names become alphabet soup to me.
But aren't the Corridans the ones that they were negotiating the treaty with or whatever, or the trade rights or whatever in...
was it Enterprise?
Journey to Babel.
Oh, okay, okay. If that's... I totally missed that reference if that's what flew past my head. So, yeah, that'd be cool. Okay, but why did Saru say first contact?
Well, at that point, he was... just seeing someone from afar. He didn't actually know that they were Corridans.
He just thought it was Darth Sidious in that hood.
That's right. At Duel, the fate started kicking in.
That would have been amazing. Yeah, so wait, in that situation, who would have been the Qui-Gon and who would have been the Obi-Wan trying to take on Darth Maul? Saru and Tilly versus nefarious, generic villain of the week that we got here.
Sure. I mean, it's clearly going to be Saru is Qui-Gon and Tilly is Padawan, you know, the Padawan learner, the Obi-Wan of the situation.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's a great line that Saru gave, and this is one of the moments that I like. I know we're crafting on kind of the early on the early bit of the show, but I did like, you know, Saru saying to Tilly, "You are a wonderful first impression." You know, that's why he says he's bringing her along for this. And those are the moments that ring true to me. That's the stuff that I buy. What I don't buy is you have this very convoluted hostage situation just to set up that, you know, Saru and Tilly are people that will honor their words. And that's going to give these Corridans hope and realize, wow, the Federation, they really do look out for us. Yay. And I'm not saying that the Federation wouldn't do that. I'm just saying, do the writers have to like beat it over our heads? You know, like, do they really not think that we're capable of like understanding that aliens can gain hope from an idea? But then of course, who would know if you don't actually like spell it out to the audience? So that's what I find frustrating to me.
One of my favorite go-to tropes in Star Trek now is when there's like a small group of bad guys. And they're allowed to kill all of them except the main one because he needs to live to prove that they aren't, you know, killers.
Yeah, what was that about, though?
But we've seen things like that. It's like in Picard where, like, Elnor kills, like, a whole group of Romulans and then Picard's like, no more. That's enough, Elnor. It's like, I don't know. Like, honestly, I was kind of like, I don't know, like a bump off this Zara guy. He doesn't seem so great.
Well, and the other thing, though, is, okay, they throw him out into the parasitic ice, but he has a survival pack with him. It's Chekhov's gun, right? Like, the guy's coming back at a later point this season.
I hope not.
But don't you think that that's what they're saying, though? Like,
it definitely seems that way because he just beams away immediately. So I'm like, oh, okay. Well, you know, I guess we're going to see more of this boring villain, I guess. Whatever.
I suppose so. I think that's what they're setting up. So it's just kind of like, but that's what irks me, though, in that, like, it's the characters, they have to be dumb for a minute. And I'm not saying I want, like, Saru to, like, dart a guy with his predator, you know, organic weapons, you know, which he did make use of. But I'm just kind of like, it's a whole, like, Batman thing where... Just kill the Joker. Like, think of all the lives you would save if you have to give up your values for just a moment and kill the Joker, rid the Joker. Well, this man is no Heath Ledger Joker. He's more of a Jared Leto sort of Joker, but we're going to see him back and it's going to cost lives, right?
Tyler, he's damaged.
Well, I wouldn't know that unless it was tattooed on his forehead. So
that's right.
You want to know how he's damaged, Cam?
How so?
He goes and calls Tilly sweetheart multiple times. That's how you know he's a bad guy. Cam, I would love it if the Star Trek Discovery writers gave us a woke villain. And, you know, instead of saying Tense and Tilly, hey, sweetheart, he'd be like, hey, her, he, they, why don't you go fetch me that survival bag? You know, like something like that, you know, but the thing is like, and I'm not saying I'm not trying to make light of pronouns or I'm not saying I'm a fan of calling women like sweetheart. What I'm saying though, is you're making your villains very one note and one dimensional. If the kind of go-to reference is making them a misogynist, like, okay, I get it. I like this guy, but all you're seeing to me is like this villain isn't very interesting if he's so, you know, one-dimensional.
But It's like, were they ever going to put depth into a character who's presented with the most superficial Western tropes possible? I mean, there's a lot of Westerns that are very rich films or TV shows or whatever, but this wasn't even really trying to do that. It was like, let's kind of cram a Western hostage plot into about 10 minutes of screen time.
For the longest time, though, I thought it was like the character was played by like Alan Cumming. And I was just like, wait, have they set him up to be the season-long villain? And I was like, why aren't they given more interesting things to do? Although in my head, I kept thinking, like, I wish they cast him as Leland versus the other guy that we had last season.
Sure. Should they have called this episode Mad Dog Day Afternoon?
Okay. There you go. Attica. Attica.
It's both a Dog Day Afternoon joke and a Back to the Future 3 joke in one. So there
I
you
love
go.
It all. I love it all there. So okay. Maybe we can mosey on over the stuff that I liked. The first
mosey.
You better believe it. The first 15 to 25 minutes of this episode, I was digging. I was back with the characters that I enjoy. Even just the stuff like the folks trying to recover in sick bay. Like being with Giorgio again and her. She's telegraphing it how much she really does care for Michael Burnham deep down when like she's so invested in getting the ship up and ready. Although not so much that she won't ditch out on her EPS duties and come shoot some people.
Yeah, I mean, this was an episode that I felt like was rich with character moments, but in terms of the stories it was telling, they weren't that interesting. Because, yeah, you've got the Wild West town, and then also, Stamets crawling around a crawl space.
That was okay. I was so bored as I was watching, like Jet Reno's got back pain, and so she has to coach him through this. And I was like, who cares? Who cares? Like
it wasn't visually interesting to watch him crawl through this Jeffrey's tube. So I'm like, okay, I'm just kind of waiting for him to, I don't know, hit a switch or something or connect two fuses.
And guess what? He was successful at that. Did anyone think he was going to fail at this task?
I guess they thought the audience was supposed to. I don't know.
Okay. I mean, I was never fooled. I thought he was going to succeed. I mean, Jet got a pretty good line. I just want to say that Ensign Gene Hazmat is now my new favorite character.
I loved, speaking of Gene there, that we had a flashback at the start of this episode, quite a protracted flashback to last season. And I loved it because I feel like they had extensive footage of Leland purely to pay off the drippings left of him in this episode.
For sure. I don't think that was officially like a flashback, though. I think that was more of the previously on Star Trek Discovery. Yeah, but I know that, look, is there anybody crying at the loss of Leland at this point, especially knowing that he's gummed up there in Giorgio's boots?
Not at all. I just thought it was hilarious that they felt they, you know, were so compelled to give extensive background, information on this character just so audiences would understand the goo that we would see get swept up in a few moments.
It'd have been great if they never explained it.
It would be. I mean, I thought this was pretty funny for Leland. Like, this is the finale, is him being, like, swept into a bucket.
Yeah, if you're on Leland bucket duty, why are you doing away with everything you have in your life to go into the future on this skeleton crew? Like, what is Ensign Gene Hazmat's purpose for being on this trip if he's on bucket duty?
Yeah, I know. It's like they said there's, I think, 88 crew members on the Discovery here. And we saw the grand scene of the main characters, kind of your principal characters, all gathering to go off on this mission. But what about these lower decks people?
I would like not Gene. Be going on this mission. Maybe, like, I don't know. Is Ensign Gene Hazmat like the Boimler or the Mariner of the crew?
I would say Gene is more of a Boimler, I think.
Boimler? Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Speaking of people that did decide to stick around, do you buy that Commander Nan was so impressed by Arium's devotion to science that's why Nan decided to fly into the future, ditch the Enterprise crew, and stick around with the Discovery crew?
Yeah, she had nothing else to do that week.
That week, yeah, yeah. Okay.
I was actually, I was pleased though to see Rachel and Cheryl added to the opening credits. I was like, oh, cool, good for her.
Right, right, okay, but like, Kayla Detmer's not on there. Joanne Owashikin is not on there. Jet Reno's not on there. And I'm talking about the characters versus the actors, of course. But so, why is Nan not now in the main credits versus all of those others?
Well, I mean, I can answer the Jet Reno one, the Tig Notaro. Did you listen to the episode of the interview with her on the official Star Trek podcast this past week?
I have not. I'm up to the Mike McMahon interview, which is great. I'd recommend everybody give it a listen. But Cam, maybe, I don't know, she's got a family, I know. Maybe going up to Toronto is a little tough on the family, but what's the deal?
She just said she has absolutely no interest in being a regular on a show. She prefers to be a guest star and pop in and out when she feels like it.
Okay. I take issue with that because I know for a fact she was a star of her own Amazon Prime series, but maybe that taught her that's why she does not want to be a regular on a show.
Yeah. She said for a long time she was following kind of the career advice of what everyone thought she should be doing. You know, you're getting bigger. You should be leading. You should be, you know, getting bigger roles. And she just said, I don't really want to. I just like doing guest stuff and doing stand-up.
Yeah, you know what? Go fly in for, what, like 3-4 days? Go fly back home, be with your family. It's probably a good deal. You're probably making okay money.
Yeah, and she's touring doing, well, not right now probably, but touring doing stand-up a lot of the time. And I think that's what she loves doing.
No, so. I think she's touring. Red States only, though.
Right, okay.
They're kind of comedy.
But it sounds from that interview that she has a miserable, miserable time remembering all of the dialogue she has to deliver for this show.
Yeah, you know, although, look, if she gets to tell Ensign Jean Hazmat that I've forgotten your name already, that's a line that I would remember.
I think that line she probably enjoys. It's more all the techno babble. She says she just literally can't do it.
Yeah, you know, this one, I always cringe when Discovery starts heavy on the techno babble, which they did in this episode with the crash landing. But then after that, they did let off, which I did appreciate. But Cam, how does this crash landing compare to the one that we got a mere 3 weeks ago on Lower Decks with Crisis Point and the Cerritos?
Yeah, I was
sorry, spoiler that. Alert for any listener that hasn't gotten to that episode. But the crash landing I refer to, it's not what you think it is. So there's surprises to be had. But Cam, sorry.
Don't worry. The whole episode is just a dream of a magical creature. So don't worry.
A magical creature that only dreams of crash landings. Yes,
that's right. I thought this one was okay. What I actually enjoyed far more than the crash was the things leading up to it. We had some really beautiful shots of the ship, like, kind of flying into the atmosphere and everything. The actual smacking on the planet's surface, I was like, this doesn't look that great. It's no, okay.
I thought that Star Trek Voyager's timeless crash on an icy planet, I thought that was much more exciting to watch, much more thrilling. And the one that we saw on Lower Decks quite recently, I was genuinely impressed by how they kind of rethought the way that you do like a crash sequence. Like we'd never seen anything like that in Star Trek before. And so we end up with this and I was just like, it seems very standard. Like there wasn't anything super unique or novel about the way that they depicted this versus something you'd see in say Star Trek Beyond or even Star Trek Generations.
Yeah, like we've never seen the Discovery crash before and you would kind of hope that they would find out a way to make that really visually memorable. But it often looked a lot like the timeless crash of Voyager, but just not as good. Like, I felt like that one, they really put some thought into how to make that ship look interesting crashing.
Yeah. Cam, I got to ask you this. Between you and me, whose name lacks authority?
Huh. Mine's very generic sounding. So yeah. Maybe that one?
Well, I don't know. Mine, I don't know if mine commands respect.
Not according to Jonathan Frakes.
No. Don't tell me again. I think yours, or I think mine lacks authority, as Tilly would put it. But do you agree with her? Does the name Tilly lack authority?
Yeah, probably. If you're just saying Tilly, Sylvia has a little more formality to it. So I feel like that actually has some authority. But just Tilly, yeah, not as much.
You know what? I'll go on a bit of a tangent, but Cam, I've been getting texts recently from an unknown caller, and it's clearly an elderly man who's using like the Siri dictation and trying to send messages to his daughter. And it's he keeps calling. Okay, I figured out now that her name is Sylvia, but at first okay. It was like it was Silly, and then it turned into Siri. And now I finally figured out, it says, "Hi, Sylvia. Last messages say your name and not the name of this dictation software. I hope you found it amusing. Lots of love, Dad." So this is, I think, the seventh or eighth message I've received from this fellow since September 28th. And I'm not saying a word. I'm just reading these messages and letting him send them to me.
Wow.
See, I would not be the one giving these saloon aliens inspiration to believe in the values of the Federation. I'm just a jerk like that.
Definitely not. Yeah, that's crazy, though.
Yeah.
You'd think it would come up in conversation at a certain point of, have you been getting my text messages?
Do you think he's hurt that his daughter Sylvia is not responding to any of these text messages?
He might, yeah. Maybe.
Well,
yeah.
Well, he should get her phone number correct. That's all. You know, if she meant so much to him, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So, wait. Okay. Speaking of that, though, I know I complained about the idea of, you know, the aliens realizing the Federation is something worth believing in. I get the sense that is going to be the story throughout the season, is getting other aliens to get behind the idea of the Federation. I'm hoping it's a little less heavy-handed than what you saw in this episode, but are you down for kind of this journey about having I like the idea of the crew going around and inspiring people. I just wish it's done in a much more creative storytelling sort of way, you know?
You don't want more taverns?
If it's the one from Star Trek Voyager, Lachey Sardine, where they have pool tables, then I am down.
Was it Sardine or Perry?
I think it's it was Sandrine. not Sardine.
That would be fine. But no, I agree. Like, the thing is, we've never seen, like, the reestablishing of the Federation before. That's something we've never seen in Star Trek, and we've always said we like to see things we've never seen before. And so that is interesting. The only thing that I wonder is it too big? Like, does it seem ridiculous or, you know, I mean, we can't say without seeing it executed, but that, like, this one ship can, like, you know, light the torch that reignites the Federation. Like, is it too much to believe?
Well, if one little hobbit can save all of Middle Earth, then let Discovery be that halfling.
Although we want it to be more like Lord of the Rings than the Hobbit.
Well, that's what I'm talking about, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, Lord of the Rings. Yeah,
I mean, like, the thing is, I love the idea. It's something that I know they've flirted with a few times in the franchise of tackling. And the fact we're doing it, that's really exciting. I hope it's not something they're going to try to wrap up in one season. Like, I hope it's sort of the ongoing story of where Discovery is going, and we can break up each season into its own stories while continuing this sort of thread. Because it would, I don't know, I might have a hard time buying it if in, like, the next 10 episodes the Federation is beloved again.
Well, what if in the next 10 episodes we have at least, like, a handful of planets say, you know what? We are behind this. Let's all work together as it once was. You've inspired us. And so at least we have very much like how the horrible finale of Enterprise had the coming together of those five founding planets. Maybe we can have this season end something like that. And then the rest of the series, it carries out the rest of the work there. And it just builds on top of that. Like, I think that could be a fascinating thing. What if the Klingons, however they are 1,000 years later, maybe they want to join the Federation by the end of the season.
Sure, that would actually be interesting because we learned last week that you could only really contact like one sector or something. Is that the word he used? Was it sector?
I think he can like scan within a 30 sector radius, and he was only able to tell that there were two starships within a 600 sector radius. Those numbers might be a little bit mishmashed in my head, but it is very limited, though.
Right, but it would be kind of cool if we worked maybe sector by sector, and each sector that we kind of tackled in a season or something like that was drastically different. So it's, we get that, you know, the elements of that, you know, where no one has gone before, where every sector is going to feel different each season, but we kind of understand the continuing thread, and we're still getting that reestablishing of the Federation.
I like that. And it makes the show unique. And what the series is doing that I continue to like, how it is setting itself apart from other Star Trek shows, is that it's establishing that it is a ship lost in time. Mm-hmm. You know, they go into the saloon and, you know, they're in awe of what is just programmable matter to these aliens. And, well, the aliens still can't figure out that these people are time travelers. It takes the generic evil cowboy bandit to figure it out. But I do like how they keep jumping on the idea that the show is pretty much like, what if a Viking ship rolled up to shore versus a motorboat? You know, there's going to be some differences between the technologies.
Do you think we're going to see by the end of the season, like the Discovery crew just using this new technology?
I think they got to integrate a lot of this stuff into what they're doing so that the ship, so much like how a Viking ship does not get blasted away by a single cannon shot from a motorboat. And yes, mm-hmm. I only ride on motorboats that have cannons on them, Cam.
Now, speaking of technology, I floated the idea, I think it was last week, it must have been last week, where I said maybe this technology will be implemented into, say, some crew members who have cybernetic implants or something. Is that possibly where we're going with Detmer?
I was wondering about that, because you mentioned that last week, and I was wondering if this is like a PTSD storyline with her. The thing is, isn't it weird that you spend all this time with her this episode, and then nothing really comes of it? So that just tells me that they are planting the seeds for something with her character.
Did you feel like she was getting good medical care?
No, not really. Well, much better medical care than that big-headed alien that's is gone after deciding to zip into the future for the sake of the galaxy.
That's right. R.I.P. big head guy. Yeah. But the Detmer stuff, I thought it was kind of weird when you have that scene right off the top where she seems completely out of it, and they're like, go to sick bay. It's like, shouldn't someone escort her? She doesn't seem too with it.
Yeah, if she's got like a concussion or something, she could like, I don't know, trip over, hit her head again, and choke on her tongue, right?
Yeah, like just collapse right outside that door. And then we get down to the med bay, and they're basically like, you don't have a concussion, you're good. It's like, well, she doesn't seem good. She doesn't seem to know where she is.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, well, okay. Speaking of the med bay, Cam, you know how the season 2 finale, I was convinced that what Stamets was seeing was just kind of a vision of Culber. It wasn't actually Culber, it's himself.
Yeah.
Because like the way that they filmed it, they had like nobody else interacting with Culber. And then Dr. Porter gave Stamets a strange look as if he was just talking into thin air. You flash forward into this one, and Culber and Stamets are interacting, but only with each other. Only for the first, like 75% of the episode. And then you should have seen me just gloating as I was like taking down my notes. I was like, oh yeah. And then all of a sudden we have Culber randomly just administer hypospray to Jet Reno. And I was just shaking my head. So I guess Culber is back in his true form. But Cam, how come all of the issues that he was going through, like last season, season 2, he had PTSD. He wanted nothing to do with Stamets. He just felt like this man out of his own skin because of what happened to him in the mycelial network and having to be completely regenerated on a cellular level. Doesn't really seem to affect him anymore.
Well, I mean, I would say they resolved it. I'm not saying they resolved it that well, but I would say they tried to resolve it with him saying he realized he wanted to pursue love with Stamets again.
Why?
Like, okay.
Like he was about to transfer over to the Enterprise, and then he just said, no, I'm not going to. And I was just like, well, okay, why? Like that's what's kind of bugging me. It's like, we've got the what, But I want to know the why. Like, what's motivating these characters other than, like, oh, I'm pursuing my true love? And I'm just like, okay, but leading up to that, that actually seemed to make you want to run away from him.
Yeah, I mean, I can kind of understand it in the sense that, like, this is a guy who's basically back from the dead. He's been in the mycelial network, and, like, Stamets is the only thing that kind of acts as a tether to him, to what his life was. So I can kind of see that. I mean, the show has definitely played with the whole tether analogy before, where we had Burnham and Ash Tyler being tethers for one another. And so it seems like that's kind of what they're going for here.
Okay, but, like, why is the Culber suddenly so jolly when he was just absolutely miserable all of season two?
Sure. I mean, I think these two characters need more time, just where we spend time with them, you know, as individuals. Like, I feel like we haven't gotten that in a while.
Not really, but I still don't buy Culber's sudden change in personality. Like, it just, it goes from, like, one episode to another. He is literally divorcing his husband. And then just the next episode, he says, actually, no, I'm not going to divorce you. I'm going to stay with you on the ship. Like, yeah. Like, there's no explanation for it other than he says, I realize I love you. I'm just like, we're okay. Again, I go back to this with Discovery, but it's the show don't tell issue. That's, you're supposed to show, not tell. Discovery always falls back on telling, not showing. And we didn't get to see, you know, his own journey, Culber's own journey through this, to this decision that he's making.
They often say, you know, that writing a happy couple is very difficult. And so I just wonder how much of that whole thing in the last season with, you know, Culber wanting to transfer off the ship and all that was basically just like manufactured drama. Because they just wanted something to do.
And they realized that that manufactured drama was just miserable to watch and the fans weren't happy?
Well, they would know all along that's not what the audience wants. But it's just like, well, we need to, you know, this is how they are, quote unquote, dealing with the fairly convoluted retcon of bringing Culber back.
Yeah, I just, like, I like Culber a lot. Like, I just... I think they created more problems by not just owning their mistake, which I don't think that he should have been killed off, especially in the way that he was killed off. But I don't think that should have happened in the first place. But I think it's even worse in how they bring him back and then what they've been doing with the character since then. Like, because, like, his character journey just continues to be frustrating for me.
And also the character of Stamets. I mean, he was a lead character on the show from, I guess, day three or something like that, whenever he popped up for the first time. I just find it weird how, you know, Anthony Rapp, great actor, I love the character, and he never seems to be that involved with what the arcs of the season are.
He had nothing to do with last season's, like, story arc. Like, you could have taken him out of the entire season and the plot would not have been affected at all. And it was just weird. And it seems as if he's on his own little planets, no pun intended here, compared with the rest of the crew.
Yeah.
Whereas he was so involved in season one, though. He was
with the whole
store
drive.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, like, are we going to see him leading in this season? I don't know. Like, I feel, just from what we're seeing right now, it does feel like it's going to be the Burnham and Saru story more so.
Yeah. The other thing is, if you asked me in season one, you know, the defining characteristics of Stamets, I'd have no problem telling you. He just... much like our Burnham discussion from last episode, he seems like a very different character than the one that we met in his first appearance. And I don't find him as interesting or as compelling as I did back in season one either.
I feel like, though, the addition of Jet Reno was partly to pump up his character, because you obviously put the two of them together and they are kind of the comedy relief now.
I get it, but I wish he had more of his bite back. Like, he used to be, like he would have those great lines, like when he was talking to Lorca, and he was just like, as I previously explained to you, we can't do X, Y, and Z. Like, those are the moments that I loved. Like, he had a real bite to him, and now he kind of seems like a lost puppy dog, you know, from season two onwards.
Well, I think maybe the problem was, too, that bite doesn't work that great on a Pike-run ship. Like, Pike is very different in terms of the atmosphere of that ship than the Lorca ship.
I totally get what you're saying, but that doesn't mean that it's a compelling character to watch anymore. I don't like watching lost puppy dog Stamets.
Sure, and to shoot my own point down, you know, you look at a character like Bones McCoy, who's always going to have that fire and have those kind of, you know, withering put downs and stuff like that. Like, he's just a character that always brings it. And I think you could have had more of that snark built into Stamets for sure.
Yeah, I just wonder if the writers, they don't want to write for characters that are kind of pricks. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like I get it. They want to have more of the positive reinforcement, but it's, you know, I don't know. It's not as engaging to me. Like, I'm far more intrigued by what, you know, of all the main characters, I want to know what, like, Tilly, Saru, and Giorgio are up to next. And, you know, Tilly doesn't have to have bite or snark, but she has very distinctive character traits. And I think a lot of Stamets' edges have been blunted over the last two seasons.
Well, okay. When we think about Tilly, we know where this character wants to go, right? Like, she wants to be a captain one day. And so she is that, you know, that protege on the show who's learning and kind of stumbling through the learning process. What does Stamets want?
Yes, you are asking the age-old question, Cam. What is Stamets' motivation? I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, that is tough. I know what Saru's motivation is for this entire episode. He wants to save his crew. I kind of get what Giorgio's motivation is. She likes sowing chaos, but deep down, she actually does kind of care about what comes next, especially for somebody like Burnham, who has shown her own willingness to care for Giorgio. I know I was kind of dunking on Culber. At least I know what Culber wants. He wants to be with Stamets, and I guess Stamets wants to be with Culber. But I wonder if, like, two characters can exist as their own entities outside of a relationship. Because I wonder if you're just kind of tying an entire identity to, you know, the man in your life. I don't know if that's all that interesting or compelling television.
Yeah, like, they need to work in, you know, a story arc for them that isn't just about them being in a relationship, that actually is tied to something on the show.
Yeah, give them distinct, you know, story arcs to do that are integrated and intertwined with, you know, the overall mission of the series, like that, and tie their own motivations into that, if that's going to be driving much of the narrative, you know. And so that's one more person. I don't know her motivation, who's in the main cast. Commander Nan, don't know her motivation, but I'm intrigued to find out more about her.
Yeah, I am psyched to see them do more with that character. I mean, I'm a little, as you said, you know, bummed for, like, a Washington and Detmer, who still aren't in the main credits, but I am just happy to see Nan there, because I think she's a really interesting and promising character. Like, we haven't seen Lairs yet, but I'm hoping we're going to go there, because, you know, we've obviously lost some cast members between season two and this season, so there's more screen time available for her to be developed more.
Yeah. Back to the Giorgio stuff as well. She did outline why she wanted to come to this timeline. She said that she didn't want to take over Section 31, which is kind of a dunk on Ash Tyler, because she was just like, if I stuck around, they would have obviously offered it to me. But then she did point out that, you know, bureaucracy is where fun goes to die. But what exactly does this portend to the Section 31 spinoff, Cam? I'm still absolutely, like confused, out of sorts. None of this makes any sense to me with all this spinoff talk. This spinoff that nobody wants.
Is it a prime Giorgio prequel?
I don't think so. Doesn't that... The timeline doesn't quite line up for me. You know, like, is she going to be, like, Lieutenant Giorgio? And
I don't know.
You know, and, like, doesn't that take away the tension? Like, knowing that your main character is just, we know exactly how she's going to die, and it's not going to be because of Section 31 mission?
Yeah, you can argue, though, I guess, about, you know, Pike, you know, with Strange New Worlds. We know Pike's fate, too.
You're right.
If it's written well, it can work. I think, though,
it's an espionage drama.
Yeah, Section 31, though, has a real strike against it, though, just in the sense that it's not interesting.
No, it's not. I don't understand.
It's so weird to me that they're just, like, tossing out lines like that, where it's like, who wants to be in Section 31? I'm like, yeah, who does? You're not doing a good job convincing me why I want to see the Section 31 spinoff.
I don't know. If it's Ash Tyler in command and Giorgio, who did establish that she likes bouncing around between universes because that's fun for her to do. Okay, I can buy her somehow finding a way to go back in time yet again. I don't know if that's how it's going to work or what. I don't get it. And the problem is with them planting all these seeds in our heads, it keeps distracting me from what is going on in these episodes.
The only thing I wonder is if it's her rebuilding Section 31 in the future, because when they talked about the Section 31 initially, I can't remember who it was, whether it was Kurtzman or someone else, said that it wouldn't be a show that they would film like right away, that it might be after season 3 or 4 of Discovery. And that makes me wonder if they need to set up the future before she can go and start Section 31 in the future.
I've never actually considered that. And I think that's actually intriguing, because I just assume that if Ash Tyler was sticking around, and I don't really understand why other than, I understand why, but it's weird that they closed off the character that way as opposed to another way, especially with all the Section 31 talk. But yeah, you're right. Like, if they're just reestablishing the Federation, maybe she wants to be the one reestablishing, you know, Starfleet Black Ops, even though I don't know if she's going to get the nod of approval from, say, Saru or Burnham.
And maybe, the actor who played Ash Tyler, what's his name?
Shahzad Latif.
Thank you. Yeah, Shahzad Latif. Maybe he can play his descendant.
In Klingon form?
Sure.
Makes sense. So, that would make sense, because we know that the albino Klingon that went to the monastery, was it Boroth? Boroth. Maybe he had some progeny and they had some kids and so forth and so on. And it could all go back to the Shahzad Latif gene pool. And honestly, those first, three episodes that we got Voke, I thought Voke was great. I don't think Shahzad Latif is to blame at all for the crummy character that was Ash Tyler. I think the writers are to blame. I think Shahzad Latif was great. If he's back as a Klingon, I am down for that.
Yeah, and you would see even moments where he had the Klingon like come out of him as Ash Tyler, and he was great there too. Like, he was great when he was actually kind of battling his inner self.
Yeah, the wolf inside.
The wolf inside, indeed.
Yeah. A couple of other things. I don't want to keep like dunking on the saloon, but it annoys me when like the Star Trek characters get out of a tricky situation not by using their smarts, but by punching and shooting everybody.
Right.
I was like, okay, well, there you go. So another thing that I'm intrigued by, Saru keeps making the point to refer to himself as acting captain. And
yeah,
Burnham's back. She's going to be reunited with the crew. It's unclear what the command situation is going to be in the long term. I think obviously in the short term, Saru will continue to be quote unquote acting captain. I don't know. Like I would love to see like a season of Saru in command. And then maybe by season 4, it's Burnham, for whatever reason, maybe it's Burnham's turn.
You know, like I like that idea too, but just the fact we get Burnham show up at the end of this episode and she's like, I've been here a year. So now we have a character who knows far more about this world than the captain of Discovery.
Yeah.
So it might make sense for her to be the one captaining Discovery.
I wonder if that's how they kind of, squared that circle there. Because I think if the Discovery and Burnham in the rocket suit showed up at the exact same time, I think Saru would have much more of a claim to being in the captain's seat versus Burnham, though. So, yeah, maybe that's the way that they kind of read around it and explain it. It's have like this year-long sojourn of Book and Burnham doing their thing in space.
Do you think Book is going to join the crew?
He's got his own ship, and that ship is featured in the new opening credits. I think he's down to do his own thing in a up-to-date ship that is using technology not from what we would consider essentially the Dark Ages.
I'm just wondering how they work this character in. Like, is he going to be just a recurring character, or is he going to join the main cast?
He is in the main cast.
He is in the main cast. That's right. Yeah. So, huh. I wonder how they make that happen. I'm just really curious about this.
Well, here's my guess, is that they'll set coordinates and they'll go up warp speed at the exact same warp factor, and their ships will be able to go to and travel together.
Oh.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So
very good.
I think, look, they're going to want like a little, he's their new Neelix, right? Like the little guide to the galaxy at this point.
Although maybe Burnham does that as well now, having been there a year.
Only a year, though. Although I say
that's true.
I say guide to the galaxy. Was Book much help to Burnham when she asked the basic questions like what's the burn and what happened to the Federation?
I don't know.
Yeah. Although I do appreciate that Zara said the burn is the greatest thing that happened to me. I was like, well, how old are you, dude? If the burn happened like 100 years ago.
No kidding. That would, like, I'm trying to think of what's an example we would give. Like,
the Napoleonic Wars were the greatest thing that ever happened to me.
Settling the frontier was the greatest thing that ever happened to me. Like, yeah. What? Yeah. It is a very strange thing to say, actually, now that you think about it.
Yeah.
So weird. The Industrial Revolution. That was my time.
The discovery of penicillin. So glad that happened to me.
Yeah. Oh, boy. So it was funny, though, this episode, in that, like, the first half, I was taking, like, copious notes. And then my notes, when we got to that second half, just dropped off.
Yeah, I'm looking at my notes right now. Yeah, pretty much. I guess the one other thing, though, like I did take note of is Saru lecturing them about using the common tongue. And Zara was just like, come on, everybody knows pidgin. And I was just like, okay, I guess universal translators aren't such a thing, but I don't know.
Yeah, and then I was like, they're calling it pidgin?
What do you mean?
Like, what does pidgin mean?
Oh, pidgin is like a dialect.
Oh, okay.
P-I-D-G-I-N.
Oh, I thought you meant the bird.
No,
That's what I thought they meant, too. I was like, I don't even know what that means.
No. Those are used for alarm clocks in the 32nd century, remember?
Very true. Flashback to last week.
Yeah. Overall, okay, so Cam, I know we were kind of like, meh on the first 90% of episode one. And we're kind of meh on the last 50% of episode two. But what episode, between the two, which one do you favor?
Well, I think I would say, probably the first episode, in that, like, yeah, the action stuff, you're like, whatever. This isn't what I really tune into this show for. But, I felt like it was telling a complete story and it had some ambition to it. Whereas like this one, I was super excited to get a story entirely set with the Discovery crew, and all the character moments were gold. Like they were great stuff. But when it came to actually writing things for them to do, they didn't have anything interesting to do. At least with Burnham, it was world building stuff. We're getting to learn more about the future. We're going to places we've never seen. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but once you've seen one futuristic Wild West saloon, you've kind of seen them all.
Hey, don't ever diss Enterprise's North Star.
Well, like, would you say that this is better than North Star?
I think North Star is actually kind of a fun episode. Like,
yeah.
I would say that North Star is a better episode versus Far From Home. What is this one called again?
Far From Home. Yeah.
So,
yeah, like North Star isn't like an all-timer episode. And I would say that maybe this episode, Far From Home, has better character moments that are written in. Like, there's some really strong character stuff. Like, I loved a lot of the Saru speeches and the moments with Tilly. Like, I thought all of that was absolutely fantastic. Some of the Giorgio stuff as well. But when it came to an actual 1 hour, you know, plotted out television show, I think North Star's better.
Yeah. I think if we're comparing the first two episodes, I would say that You Are That Hope is better. I think those last 5 minutes are killer. And it does follow like a story where you and I were not fans of like nonstop shootouts, but at least it's getting you from point A to point B. Whereas this one, much better on the character moments. But after you get into that saloon, for me, my interest level drops off, especially when you have like Stamets stuck in the Jeffries tubes. And it's just kind of like, what am I watching?
Yeah, like, you know, I think maybe the saloon stuff would have worked. I don't know that it would have worked that great. But if you had a very strong B story, it would actually balance the episode out better. But when you're cutting from the saloon to Stamets in a crawl space, you're kind of like, okay, boy, it's a lot of people just in stationary positions.
Yeah. This one also kind of, I kept going back to the Andorian incident, in which I think it was one of the first times we just got to watch Archer get his butt kicked for an hour straight, but that also introduced us to Shran, and it was yet another hostage situation, and I'm just kind of like, I'm kind of done with Star Trek doing hostage stuff. It's just, it kind of feels derivative. I think the last time it was actually kind of fun was Starship Mine, in which we had the crew down on that planet, and they actually did have to kind of think of clever ways to figure out what was going on. Like, that worked for me.
Yeah, I think there's like ways to do it, but this isn't really it. Like, this was so much based on just a villain, just this, you know, this kind of mustache twirling villain who walks in and just everyone just comes to a standstill while this guy kind of preens and rants for, you know, 15 minutes.
Yeah. So, okay. All that other way, I'm looking forward to what will happen in episode 3. It seems as if they've done a lot of the filling in the blanks sort of obligatory stuff that they need to do. You've got Burnham back with the Discovery crew. I think we know what the raison d'etre of the series is moving forward. It's kind of reestablishing the Federation. Look, the first two episodes, we got that stuff out of the way. Let's move forward. I'm looking forward to episode 3.
Well, and the thing is, I feel like even though I'm, you know, mixed on these two episodes, I don't think either of them are bad episodes at all. But like, I think that even if I'm not really on board with them fully as stories, I think they've both done a good job of setting us up for where we're going. I think like, you know, I don't know that when I watch and it's tough to say, we could go on a complete right turn somewhere along the road, kind of like with season 2, where, you know, you watch the first two episodes that are kind of Red Angel based stuff, and next thing you know, you're battling like octopus cyborgs from the future, you know, halfway through. Never saw that one coming.
That's how I spend my Saturdays, but okay.
I'm hoping that this is setting up where we're going, you know, and the tease off that last episode with, you know, the guy who's, you know, going to basically help them restart the Federation. That excites me. Like, I'm hoping that we have stability, because we did not have stability at the start of season 2, where there was showrunner drama behind the scenes and, you know, a switchover behind the scenes going on. I'm hopeful that, you know, having Michelle Paradise in place, you know, she co-wrote the last two episodes with Kurtzman and I think Jenny Lamette as well. I'm hoping they're mapped out where they're going, and these two are going to, you know, we're going to build off where we've started and just keep on going.
Yeah, I'll pose this to you. These first two episodes versus the first two episodes of season 2. I was far more excited by what we got with Brother and New Eden. There's almost kind of this different sort of tone introduced for the series with the introduction of Pike and everything. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I wish that these first two episodes had kind of excited me the way that those first two episodes did. But ultimately, you and I, we did get frustrated with this Red Angel mystery that we never really cared about, and they never actually established why Starfleet cared about it either. It was just something you were told you have to care about. But I care about much more about this season's ongoing story with the reestablishment of the Federation. Let's just hope that further episodes are going to be far more gripping and compelling and, let's be honest, like non-derivative than what we've gotten so far.
Well, exactly. And I mean, the thing is, maybe we'll find out, you know, episode 3 seems to be the deciding factor, because episode 3 of season 2 Discovery was the Point of Light, or whatever it was called, the one with the Klingon, you know, baby head and whatever. So let's hope that if we continue having episodes like this, you know, hopefully better than this one in terms of your A and B story. But if we continue down this road and having the sort of consistency, that's a good thing. I'm more worried about, you know, because you had Point of Light, I think it was called, and Saints of Imperfection at number 5. So like the first half of season 2 felt very rocky, and I'm hoping to avoid that this time.
Yeah, I totally agree. But we also know that the showrunner situation is a little bit more stable this year.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And I think Jonathan Frakes directs one very soon. It might even be the next episode. I can't remember.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's talked about this season saying it's a lot more fun this season. So I'm like, perfect. That's what I want to hear.
Well, do you ever trust anything that Frakes says in these interviews?
No, not really. I don't really buy anything that any creative person tells me about a product before it's released. You know, it's always like, this is our heaviest album ever. Or, you know, this movie is the best sequel yet. Uh-huh, sure thing. But whatever.
What else is Frakes going to say? Yeah, this season's even drearier than the last one.
Well, he could have said, we're going a much more dark and serious route than we have before. To which case I'd go, oh, I don't like the sounds of that.
Yeah, true.
So, you know, if I felt like it wasn't a qualitative thing, he wasn't saying it's going to be great. He just said it's more fun this season. So I was like, okay, I'll take that. Like, if it's more, you know, if there's more like comedic hijinks going on, I'm down. Works for me.
Yeah, same here.
Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Jump on over to the Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. Tyler, what are we doing next time?
I think we're going to throw everybody for a loop, and we're going to go and do another review of Sub Rosa from Star Trek The Next Generation Season 7.
Oh, I thought you were going to say another review of North Star.
You know what? Why don't we do a doubleheader there?
Yeah, right. Okay, you can, of course, find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam, V as in Vision of Linus Smith.
You can find me at Reportin, that's R-E-P. P as in pigeon, O-R-T-O-N.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.